and how they're going to kind of hit civilians, which has been disproved almost uniformly in the history of U.S. intervention in the Middle East. So there's that. And also it's a question of how it's going to affect Trump's push for his military buildup, because he's going to sort of posture as the wartime president. You know, as Fareed Zakaria said, much to his detriment, he's now the president. He's proved he's the president because he can launch a military strike, which, again, to me, is not what this country should stand for.
Bill Hart, I want to thank you for being with us, director of the Arms and Security Project at the Center for International Policy. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be in Cambridge, Massachusetts on April 24th and 25th, and moving on to Vermont, from Burlington to Montpelier, from Middlebury to Brattleboro. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Gesder, Nirmin Shah, Carla Wilsler, Agata Stino, Sam Malkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Food Chains, the Revolution in America's Fields, taking place Friday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Food Chains is a documentary film about the group of Florida farm workers and their Fair Food Program, who partner with growers and retailers to improve working conditions for farm laborers in the United States. Screening will be followed by a panel discussion with Licia Anderson of the Western Farm Workers Association and Ramon Ramirez of PECUN. Again, the screening of Food Chains, the Revolution in America's Fields is taking place Friday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1121 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Drink and Think Trivia, Saturday, April 15th at the Blackwater Bar in Portland. Drink and Think Trivia helps get books to those in need. This night is a benefit for the Children's Book Bank and Books to Prisoners. Again, that's Drink and Think Trivia Saturday, April 15th at 7 p.m. at the Blackwater Bar, 835 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Minors are allowed until 11 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from ADX, a collaborative hub offering access to shared wood, metal, screen printing, jewelry, and digital design shops through a monthly membership program. The ADX Makerspace, Learning Center, and Fabrication Shop allows people to bring their ideas to life. Open every day at 417 Southeast 11th in Portland and at adxportland.com. And now it's time for Abe and Joe.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. And don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky.
Whoa, real honest-to-goodness cowboy song written by Cole Porter.
That's right.
Cole Porter. We're going to talk about environmental land use issues in the Pacific Northwest and all over America, and about the destruction of the EPA, which is going to be so much fun. And I want to tell people you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. It's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor right next to me and me. And my name's Joe Uris. And you should call us to talk. And in a minute, Abe will tell you how you can do it online. 231-8187.
That's right, Joe.
I love that. Radio voice, people.
Yeah, if you don't want to call, you can drop us a line at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. It's just that easy.
The Twitter machine is a little bird, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how it works.
I like images, like emojis, I think.
Boy, you're hip with all the lingo.
Yeah, I really know what's happening, dude. I'm the ultimate Luddite, and I admit it and love it. Okay, we're going to talk about the Elliott State Forest, which the state is being forced to sell.
No, the state isn't being forced to
sell. No, they backed off. They backed off. You're correct. Here's the deal. In general, the decisions of the Trump administration essentially crippling the Environmental Protection Agency will have impacts directly in most states. In Oregon, notably, there's a question about whether or not the cleanup of the Willamette will continue and how deep and thorough it will be. That's one example. Another example is the fact that as states lose federal support, they face a need to raise money. And states like Oregon, where there's a great wealth in timber, become tempted to turn things like the Elliott Forest into a great trash land. I think that's fair to say. But that has been blocked.
Is that fair?
Is that fair?
I understand a big chunk of it was going to be sold to the Cow Creek Band of the Umpqua Tribe.
That's true.
And the Confederated Tribes of Kuzla, Umpqua, and Suisla, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, and historically, the intention of Native American communities is to retain those ancestral lands. But the money question comes in.
Certainly. But are you implying that those tribes, were they to become stewards of this land, would trash the place?
No.
Because that seemed to be what you were saying.
No. What I'm saying is you're putting these...
You said it would turn into a trash heap when sold.
Did I say it would turn into a trash heap? I said I thought it would be cut down, which I believe it will be.
Okay.
Because, understand this, these Native American groups are poor. And if the federal funding for various programs that exist now disappears, the question of how to support those communities becomes paramount. And the consequence of that will be, and this is where you and I may disagree, the deforestation of those kinds of lands. And that's one of the trends that I see as a consequence of what Trump is doing. Now, there are other examples. We know from BARC, which is a great organization here in Oregon.
But wait, though.
Wait.
You claim those Native American groups are poor, yet the Cow Creek Band of the Umpqua operates a prosperous casino, the Seven Feathers.
That's true.
In the middle of Oregon.
That's true.
Quite possibly providing them with the funds to purchase these tracts of land.
It is possible that some tribal communities will survive, in fact, flourish under the conditions that we currently have.
Well, I'm just trying to nail this down. Are these groups poor or are they not?
Yes, they're poor.
Okay,
poor relative to casino, poor relative to the very wealthy landholders in the state.
Okay.
Yeah, poor.
Just want to make sure we're being accurate.
Okay. Ooh, you're just feisty today, aren't you?
Well, you know, accuracy.
Accuracy is not possible. Listen, I want to continue with this a little bit. In Mount Hood, at the Mount Hood area, and this is really this one you will not argue with me on, what's happening is really very scary. There's been a sale very quietly with a comment period that went under the wire. Nobody noticed. 13,271 acres. It's a timber sale in the White River watershed of Mount Hood.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a very likely event. And in the Trump world, that makes perfect sense. That is to say, there's no reason. What good is a pretty scene? What good is a forest? Mm-hmm. How many people really hike? How many people really fish?
Now, you say in the Trump world, that doesn't make sense. But Trump himself has publicly stated his desire to conserve public lands. That runs counter to the congressional GOP's agenda. They want to sell it off.
Trump.
Wholesale.
Trump says many things.
Yes.
His administration and the thrust of the Republican Party is immensely destructive to the environment. You're not arguing that, are you?
No.
Okay, so that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So shut up! Ah! No, actually, it's a good argument to have because one of the most confusing things about Donald Trump, I find, is that he will, on Monday, say something that you or I might be comfortable with, and on Tuesday say something which ignites our fear of fascism. And that's part of his, I think, there are two choices about him in this context. He's crazy. That's choice number one.
Okay.
Number two, he is a calculatingly confusing, that is deliberately confusing man to do what he thinks is right, if he can remember it. And there's some problem. There's an indication that his hair leaks his brain. It's a very odd condition, perhaps unique to him.
Perhaps.
Okay, so here's the deal. From my perspective, we have not taken care of the environment very well, even in a state like Oregon, which is very aware of those kinds of issues. And from my perspective, as the amount of money flowing from the federal government to the states to bolster public land holdings, to support monuments and so on, is being taken away. Almost anything that was done by President Obama, particularly by executive order, but also by law, is being reversed. And that is being done not just because there's money to be raised for the states as they face decimation of federal monies, but what really is happening is an intellectual effort to dismiss the concerns of environmental crisis. Mm-hmm. And I think that's universal. It really is everywhere. I mean, when Trump talks about we're going to restore coal, for which there is no market outside of China, when he talks about coal mining as if it were some kind of healthy job situation and ignores the damage that it does to the human lung, the dangers that are involved in coal mining, the fact there are traditional coal mining communities that produce a great literature of music and so on, all of that really makes no sense as a long-term strategy. What really does make sense is an effort to convert to solar and wind power and so on, and and to really stop things like fracking and mountain removal and all these other things. They now take a second place, if any place, as Trump praises the hard work of coal miners. They are great people. They are hardworking people, and they are suffering people. And they have no longer the enormous power that was the case post-World War II for coal miners who were united in a powerful labor union. Anyway, I'm just saying, things are really going to become very crisis-ridden in the next few years with Trump, no matter what. Because, as you pointed out, we have an insane House of Representatives. We have the most ignorant, the most carefully calculated reversals of what I consider the positive traditions of social concern by the government. That's what's happening. And I wanted to point out, right now, as Bark says, very quietly, public lands are being decimated, and this is not selling the land, this is simply cutting all the trees in it, making it a place that will have less value, and you won't be having hikers or horseback riders or campers. Why go there? It'll look like the moon.
We've got a phone call.
Okay.
Paul, you're first. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
What's on your mind?
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Well, so, you know, I think that I just wanted to say thanks for bringing this issue up about the decimation of public land and the decimation of the EPA. I think that, you know, there have been so many crises over the first 100 days that this has been, you know, a very serious issue that has sort of fallen into the background. And I think that as the regulatory apparatus of government, which is dismantled, we're going to see corporations trying to, you know, seize all the resources they can, in any way that they can. So they'll be decimating public land and polluting and stripping resources out of the ground, and there won't be that regulatory agency, the EPA, to stop them. So I think what we need to do is we need to call our congressmen and, you know, we have some good congressmen out here in Oregon, and just remind them that this is one of the many priorities that we have, people who care about the environment. So it's just tough when you've got they're trying to strip away healthcare and put a you know, conservative wacko in the Supreme Court, and then to remember that we have to do this as well. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, I appreciate the call, not just because you agree with me, but I really am very concerned. On so many fronts, we have a reactionary direction. We have a U.S. attorney, national, you know, attorney general, who is clearly a racist denier, and I would call him, in the old language of the 1960s, a pig. Anyway.
Hmm.
I'll say that. So far.
So far.
Yeah. And I see that all over. The decimation of the EPA, which you'll agree, I think, Abe, mm-hmm. is part of the agenda of the Trump administration overall, is not a good thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay.
Absolutely. So there's a dimension, though, to this. I'm talking about the sale of the Elliott State Forest. A portion of the Elliott State
Forest.
Well,
it is. I want to be clear that I agree with you that it's complicated, that the Cow Creek community really could benefit by the sale to them. And they may well be able, in terms of what they can afford, to keep those forests and not to destroy them. But that will depend, as you suggest, on things like their gambling revenues.
But here's the question I want to examine a little bit here. So Bob writes into the Facebook page to ask a question. So white folks get to extract natural resources, but the original inhabitants shouldn't be able to. That's a very interesting question.
Well, it's a good question, and it does suggest cultural and racial bias by the liberal establishment.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, part of there's been some pushback. Exactly. Actually, there's been some pushback to the pushback, right? Environmental groups rallied in opposition to the sale. They were able to mount a pretty effective social media pressure campaign against the state treasurer, Tobias Reed, to get him to reverse his position. There's three members of the state land board.
Right.
All right. The governor, the state treasurer, and the secretary of state.
Right.
The governor and the state treasurer, both Democrats, Kate Brown and Tobias Reed, respectively, and the secretary of state, whose name was just in my head but has now escaped, is a Republican. Richardson, I want to say his name.
Yeah, and it's his aim to become governor, of course.
Yeah, that's one of those stepping stone positions, Secretary of State.
And he's going to get a large amount of money from...
of course.
Yeah.
Yep. So there was a pushback against Tobias Reed, the treasurer, by environmental groups. But now there's a pushback to the pushback, as I mentioned just a second ago, mm-hmm. From various minority groups saying that the environmental lobby... established their position and exerted pressure with no consultation with the Cow Creek Band of the Umpqua Native American tribe.
And I think that's true. I think that's a very valid criticism.
Yes. But I've been looking now for some sort of reporting on the intentions of the Cow Creek Band for the use of this land.
Right.
And I haven't been able to find anything definitive.
Now I could say in my conspiratorial tone, that's interesting.
It is interesting, but... there seem to be a whole lot of assumptions in play here, one of which seems to be that everybody, or at least white people, seems to have some idea of what the Cow Creek Band wants to do with that land, when in fact we don't have much of an idea.
I think that's a good criticism of my concern.
Yeah.
I also think that here's the overarching point from my perspective. As groups, whether or not they're Native American groups or their interest groups, struggle to keep as much wildland wild, the pressure grows because all of the monies that the government previously put into making that a choice you could make without terrible economic consequence begin to disappear. When the EPA pulls away from doing the things that it was created to do, the consequence is that, well, you don't really have a lot of choice. You don't really, pardon me, know what to do or how to do things in the face of inequities in the society, racism and cultural bias and so on. So what the decimation of the EPA really does is put us all at odds with each other. It's a brilliant strategy, and I think it's going to become very common.
According to the Willamette County Chieftain, which is a newspaper out of South Central Oregon,
mm-hmm.
let me see here. Okay. Only one group, a timber company out of Roseburg called Lone Rock Resources, in partnership with the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians, submitted a proposal for acquiring the forest. The Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Suislaw would, under that proposal, hold a conservation easement. But the fact, I would infer from that, the fact that this partnership includes a timber company, it would seem that the tribe's intent is to harvest at least some of that land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I look, one thing you can say about lumber companies is, in terms of their own interest, in terms of the profit to be made and the cutting to be done, that's what they're going to push for. How powerful they are in that alliance, what that really means. I'm very distrustful. I'm distrustful not because of some cultural values or lack of them, but I understand the fact that everybody who has been dependent to some degree on federal largesse mm-hmm. won't have it anymore under the Trump administration. And that mm-hmm. pressure is going to be enormous if you want to send your children to good schools, to colleges, universities, et cetera. And you want health care and so on. And in the Indian Health Service also, by the way, is going to be decimated. If you are concerned, you are caught in a horrible bind. I do not see this as on the part of the Native American communities as an evil thing at all. It's a practical or a pragmatic concern for the survival of a community that has been beset by white racism forever.
Yes, that's absolutely true. But it raises some larger questions, I think, including is that land, the long-term health of that land, is it in better hands owned by the state and held as a public trust, which it is now?
Uh-huh.
And we should mention that under the governor's plans to maintain public ownership of that land, that plan includes the sale of some 20 million board feet of lumber over a period of many years.
Right. It's a selective harvest.
Right.
They
exactly.
call it.
So the question is... under whose stewardship would that land be in better shape? The Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Native Americans or the state of Oregon? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I don't either, yeah. frankly. I do know that the pressures that create the demand for that cut have to do with not with the desire to build houses for the Umpqua. It has to do with the classic situation of Native American communities where they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm very concerned with that. And that's but one example. I mean, there's so many examples. Today's New York Times, page A21, talks at length about what will be the context and the consequences of cuts for the EPA, and they're pretty horrendous. I'm not going to list them all, but there's many of them. The overall impact, for example, no longer will there be an effort to make cars more energy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
No longer will there be the fuel standards at all. There will be no real issue of dealing with brownfields, which has direct relationship to, for example, the cleanup of the Willamette. Remember that during World War II, a vast amount of crap was dumped into the Willamette River, and the plans we've seen for cleanup were not adequate. And the hope of many people in the environmental community would be that it would be a more profound cleanup. Well, will there be any cleanup beyond what's already happened? Probably, under this administration, not.
Probably not.
So that's just one example. There are many, many other examples all over the country. The question of the radioactive waste at Hanford comes to mind. That, too, will be the cleanup of that has been an ongoing process since the end of World War II, and there's no clarity from the government about how far it'll go, particularly under the Trump administration.
We've got some callers.
Great.
Michael, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Sorry, I'm having a coughing fit, Michael.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you recover.
I hope so, too. I would be dead if I didn't.
Oh, you might. And so, but
there
you
go.
Are not coughing, so that's good.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, what's up?
Well, I want to talk about an aspect of this, which is, What does the environmental community think people should be able to do in rural places? It sounds to me like, from what I've seen over many years, that the only role they think people should have who live in rural communities is to be obsequious hosts at bed and breakfasts for urban environmentalists who want to come and vacation in rural areas.
Well, you nailed it, Michael. That's what the environmental community wants for rural areas. Nothing but beds and breakfasts.
Because you take a look at everything they do is destructive toward, well, not everything. I mean, that's like a way overstatement. But what they do is profoundly destructive of the economies of rural places. The environmental movement has killed the timber industry in this state, absolutely killed it. And this is not a good thing from my point of view. I think people deserve to live in rural places and have a way to make money. And the environmental movement is inimical to just about every single way that is, other than the bed and breakfast I mentioned. So I think that's an aspect of this that's worth paying attention to, because, those people have largely ended up as Trump voters, and that's probably a large part of the reason why they have.
Well, actually, I think you make a good point. That is that the working class, by the way, I just want to point out that it was Clinton, the president, and Ronald Reagan, the president, who changed the term from working class to middle class. And that's no accident. That's a nice little ledger domain. No income changes, but definition of who you are changes, which have created an idea that actually we are no longer a working society. We are really a middle class society. But I just want to throw that out. But Abe, you were about to say something and I interrupted you. I apologize.
Sure. Well, okay, Michael, to answer your question, yes, the environmental movement did largely bring a halt to the timber industry in the state of Oregon, at least on the scale that it used to operate, on which it used to operate. And the reason for that is pretty straightforward. There was a growing realization in the scientific community that the wholesale destruction of old growth timberlands were antithetical to the overall health of the ecosystem in the Pacific Northwest. And we would face long-term costs far in excess of the short-term profits able to be realized through the harvest of that timber. We came to the realization that the large-scale harvest of timber over the long term is not a sustainable practice, and hence we have moved away from it. Now, you're right, that has had an economic consequence. And I agree with you to the extent that I believe that if there is going to be this sort of transition away from resource extraction, then we need to try and figure out a way to sustain economically those communities who were formerly engaged in that resource extraction. One idea in this situation might be to put out of work timber workers to work farming and processing hemp.
Whoa, I smell marijuana
in
the
air. Idea. But to step back a little bit farther, and look at this question on a little bit of a larger scale, I think it's undeniable, and you're a scientist, I think probably you would agree with me here, that industrial capitalism itself is antithetical to the long-term health of the global ecosystem. In a little less than 200 years, industrial capitalism has managed to foul the place up pretty good. And that's a question, that's an existential question that we have to wrestle with.
Well, I don't agree with you about industrial capitalism, because industrial capitalism has raised more people out of poverty and a higher percentage of people out of poverty on this planet than ever have before.
That's true.
Now, I'll say the same thing about capitalism that I think about the environmentalists. They did this enormous amount of pollution, and it probably was evolutionarily inevitable given the way things happened, just the way the economy evolved. People didn't realize, or people, if they realized, didn't care, whatever happened. And now, attitudes are evolving, and they need to take care of that. The environmental movement similarly heedlessly destroyed the timber economy of this state. They didn't give a rip. They didn't try to do anything about it. And now you're saying, well, yeah, maybe they could grow hemp. Well, maybe they can grow hemp, and maybe that's a good thing. But I don't see the environmental movement giving much of a rip about the destruction of the economies and all of those communities. You look at, Jackson County in southwest Oregon, and they can't even afford libraries anymore.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I don't deny that the collapse of the timber industry in some of those southern counties has had a devastating effect on local economies. And you're correct that that something needs to be done about that. But I don't think that the environmental movement is as monolithic as you are making it out to be. There's a great number of environmentalists. I know a great deal of them personally, who do give thought to these things and who are considerate and thoughtful when they talk about transitioning away from traditional resource extraction-based economies. Now, these are people I know and people I talk with. These are not people forming policy. So yeah, I'll concede your point that that these changes, these transitions, need to be done in a way that is that honors the sovereignty of these communities and their ability to sustain themselves economically.
Well, you know, I was an environmentalist back in the 70s, but what I saw the environmental movement doing in the 80s and the 90s, and it's not like I want to wantonly destroy the planet or anything, but what I saw that movement do over the last three decades has really turned me against it, just because of how little they care about the effects on the people they have those effects on. And I don't mean your friends. I just mean look at what that movement has accomplished as a social force. It's destroyed those places. And right now they're busy destroying the coal mining areas.
Whoa, stop when you get into the coal areas. You understand that coal mining now is no longer a cute little tunnel that goes into the ground and a few people die every now and then. We now have our mountaintop removal, and we now have a government that's saying, actually, literally, it's okay to dump poisonous residues from mining into the water that is primarily used for drinking and agriculture in that region. That's real. There's no argument about that. That's really happening. No.
And there's a difference between you need to make sure they don't do it wrong and shut down coal.
Well, I really have to argue with you here, because what is being done by the EPA is to remove regulation, is to destroy any kind of oversight from the federal government in areas which have a deep need for monies. And at the same time, the federal government under Trump and the Republican Congress is really ripping off our communities, particularly our poorer communities, so that the whole structure turns away from a rational approach to a very cruel, very harsh way of looking at things. When I see Donald Trump trot out 20 or 30 coal miners in their hard hats and proclaim that this is some kind of a major achievement, that he's made coal mining and coal clean, he says, clean coal, a major fuel source in the face of an excess of natural gas from fracking and excess of oil from a variety of sources. I mean, it really is deceitful and dangerous and harsh, and I believe long-term concerns environmentally incredibly destructive.
Well, I'm not here as a Trump supporter, because I didn't vote for Trump.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's not like I want to defend Trump. What I think about that is that environmentalist overreach is part of what led to the election of Donald Trump. Environmentalist overreach alienated all these working class people who saw accurately that the environmentalists were out to destroy their livelihood. And they stood up and voted for the guy who said, we're not going to let that happen anymore.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but in fact, the coal industry destroyed the coal industry. Its failure, let's pretend that there was no federal regulation, which there was some. Let's pretend that there was no regulation. The coal industry itself is run by people who do not give a damn about their workers. This has been proven by many coal mining disasters over recent times and older times, where saving money, making profit is the chief motivation. Secondly, and this is really important, coal mining as an industry is no longer about digging tunnels and extracting coal. It's much more about taking mountaintops off and creating enormous amounts of garbage land and really destroying natural creeks and so on. And that is absolutely true. There's no denying that. The changes of the technology, which you could argue are inevitable because it's a more practical way to get at the coal, would only make sense if there was a great need for that coal. But there isn't. It really is not. environmentally and even economically effective. And that's why coal is being turned away from. It's not about over-regulation from the government, although Trump and his allies would have you believe that. And I think maybe you believe that.
Well, I believe some of that, but what I think the reason why coal is getting to be less of a good economic proposition is because fracking has made natural gas so cheap.
That's also true.
And that's environmentalists, also true.
And environmentalists, of course, are opposed to fracking.
Yes, absolutely we are.
Yeah, I know. So
I think any rational person should be opposed.
Well, I like fracking because I want to live in a roller coaster world. And Oklahoma has finally achieved the very great possibility that we could be sitting here if we're Oklahoma and we would sink or rise.
Yeah, right. Hey, listen, Michael, thank you for the call. I think we're going to give some others a try.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. One more thing before we move on. Michael's raising a fundamental question in the environmental debate, and that is, does the right of a community, say a coal mining community in West Virginia, does their right to make a living mining coal and support their community, does that trump the concerns, so to speak, does that trump the concerns derived from the combustion of coal as an energy source?
Well,
which is more important?
Well, I think that's the wrong question. I actually think that's the wrong question. If the government were operating coal mines in the old traditional ways, if there were real need for that fuel, real need, strategic need, the issues would be very different. What we're really talking about...
I disagree. About, no.
Well, no. Massey and the other coal companies through the extraction of coal, make a lot of money and do not in any way put equal value back into the land and the people. They don't.
What I'm asking is, can the burning of coal be justified at all?
Actually, it can't.
Right.
There is no such a thing. There is no. Oh, I see. There is no such a thing as clean coal.
Right. So the argument that we must allow the combustion of coal to continue because the economic health of communities depends on it, I don't think that argument holds up. Now, that said, I think then there becomes a public obligation to help those communities transition to another mode of economic sustainability.
And is there a plan like that with the Republican Congress?
No, I don't think there has ever been a plan like that. But that's what we need to consider as environmentalists if we talk about eliminating the combustion of coal, which I believe we should do.
Well,
but incumbent with that is a duty, an obligation then, to help the people whose livelihoods depend on the extraction of
coal. Well, I wouldn't argue with that. Okay. But I do think it's really important to understand that the United States has issued any effort to create a rational energy policy. It is obvious that the technologies of wind and solar have reached the point now where they can replace a large percentage, if not all, of the efforts at using these extractive industries. Okay. And we're not doing that.
Let's go to Heidi. Good morning. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Let me plug in. My battery's going bad.
Okay.
Hold on one second. Thank you for your program today. It's very good. Hold on.
Well.
Okay. I have a couple things. Why is the... coal industry and all these groups and timber industry, why are they coddled about we got to help these people, and you got the Detroit people and all these other people who lost jobs and nobody wants to help them? So to me it's a little I don't. Anyway, that's not what I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
I want to talk about, there's so much good things on your program, I love it. Have you guys read Born Under a Bad Sky? And then Ben Brown's So Long Looks Like Green to Me, or any of Derek Jensen's information. The guy who wrote Born Under Bad Sky, his name is Jeffrey St. Clair. He's an investigative journalist. And the information that you have in your program today will change radically if you read these two books. Mm-hmm. They talk about, everything from A to Z, all the nuclear crap up in Hanford, from the forest, to Al Gore in his, it's just ridiculous. Are you there?
Yep.
Okay. And I can quote pages if you'd like, because I know people like to have valid information and accuracy. But in Born Under a Bad Sky, it has a lot of the information that been brown so long. Looks like green to me, hasn't it? But it's updated. And he goes on to say, he's talking about Weyerhaeuser, okay? We all know about that horrible company. And about how they were, you know, really close to the Clintons. And Clinton wanted to run for governor. He did run for governor, and he failed miserably. So he went and poked his tail and kissed, you know what, Weyerhaeuser. Weyerhaeuser gave him all this money, and Weyerhaeuser went in. Weyerhaeuser, I'm talking, I'm trying to do my 3 minutes. Weyerhaeuser owned a lot of property in Arkansas. Tons of property. He was the biggest landholder, or they were. Anyway, so Clinton and his little, all his little allies and kowtowed and apologized, and so Clinton got his job as governor, and Clinton and Weyerhaeuser went in and to the Northwest, and what they were doing is they were illegally cutting more than 88,000 trees off the Winnie Mouth National Forest in Southern Oregon. Then they went on, and their next thing was, and this is all under, you know, Fish and Wildlife, you know, they turned the other, looked the other way. Anyway, they have a thing called, you might want to check this out, it's called Option 9. This is implements Clinton Forest Condom that restarted the logging in the ancient forests of the Pacific Northwest. So, anyway, if you can read this stuff, I don't know if you have you?
I have not.
No, but please remember that we're not about defending the Democratic Party or Bill Clinton or any of that. I mean, it's historically interesting and something I actually don't know a lot about, but I really, it doesn't matter. We are where we are now. We have a government, we have a federal government that now avows absolutely to destroy environmental efforts under the leadership of an EPA, which is run by an idiot out of Arkansas. No, an idiot out of Oklahoma, pardon me.
Yeah, I know. Me either. I'm not into either one of them. I'm just saying that this is relevant to today's information, to what's happening today, because it's the same as it was back then. It's just that it's changed hands, and now it's just a big shell game, as it always has been. So neither one of them, none of these people, I don't care who they are, in the EPA, back then as now, it's all the same. They're still doing the same old crap they've done before. Only now it's more obvious. Back then, they were like making it look like, oh, you know, we're so environmental like Clinton and Gore. They're not. They're the same as this guy. Only this guy's more obvious. It's in our face. Well, back then, it was not.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I think I understand your argument, and indeed, I'm not arguing.
I'm just saying, please know that this stuff is there to read and to make it be known that it hasn't changed.
Okay. Well, can you tell us the name of those books again, please?
We lost her.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call. All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Jeffrey Stone says, how much do we value the right of free speech is put to its severest test when the speaker is someone we disagree with the most. He speaks on the fight for free speech on college campuses. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage and studio, DMA Roberts welcomes back New York Times bestselling author Lisa C. and her new book, The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane. And at 11:30, Art Focus welcomes the director of Portland Design Week, running from April 21st through the 29th. Plus, he looks at Untitled Studios' concept for the Portland Green Loop. And tonight at 5 on the Cable Evening News, a report on TriMet's partnership with the FBI's Junior Agent Program.
FBI Junior Agent Program? We give kids little guns? What?
You tune in at 5 and find out. And the detention center that's part of its $11 million budget. Plus, KBOO takes a look at alternatives to higher learning, including the Portland Underground Graduate School, known as PUGS. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported station, KBOO 90.7 FM. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. We're talking very broadly today about the environmental movement, about the sale of public lands under the Trump administration and perhaps more ominously under the GOP Congress. Sue writes into the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, Sorry, but Michael is wrong. The real death of money from timber is because of extreme mechanization of timber harvesting and milling. Also, demand is mostly from Asia, and when we changed the law to allow the export of whole logs, the timber industry blames environmentalists, but they are just the scapegoats.
Okay. I think that's really an important point, by the way, which we have not we will not have time, unfortunately, to explore today. I want to just point out, I mean, look, with the guy, with Pruitt, with the Environmental Protection Agency essentially put in the hands of a person who has a history of opposition to environmental laws and environmental reforms, and then in the process of that, the budget gets cut, and they end up dumping a bunch of money into hiring their own police to protect Pruitt. That's real. I mean, this is so obviously what it is. Basically, a withdrawal of American governmental support for the survival of the planet. I really am very concerned about this, and I think it will be, the consequence of this will go well beyond the time of the fascist clown prince.
Let's go back to the phones.
Okay.
We got Paul. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Language is everything.
Well, it's a lot.
So I called because every time you've been saying the Trump administration, it just grates on me. There was a treatise went passed on the internet about a month ago that we should be calling this the Republican administration, because when Trump goes away and we get Pence, then what are we going to say?
Well, that's a good point.
And, you know, another component of this is that one of the things that's going on, You were talking about this at the beginning of the program, Joe. I forget what they were removing, but it's not just Trump. It's the Republicans in power, because there's this racist component to their plan, which is to remove any positive accomplishments of the Obama administration from the judicial code, whatever the law of the land is, or however you want to term that. And by extension, that's another form of race. That's not racism. That form of racism is a form of genocide. To remove anything positive, that contributions that a group of people have made to society, or one person has made to society.
I think that's a good point. And as to the question of what to call them, I don't care.
Language is everything, Joe. It goes back to the Republican administration. It's not just Trump.
You know? I agree with you. I don't misunderstand.
We're not. Listen, you know, I'm one who called last president Obama, but there doesn't deny the fact that he did have several good accomplishments under his belt, and we need to make sure that we're identifying the culprits here. And it's
okay.
Not just scapegoat one thing. The whole tree is bad, not one apple. Goodbye.
Fair enough.
I agree, and I think that fundamentally what we're talking about, we're barely scratching at the surface of a dangerous and, by the way, historically consistent effort to decimate the land. I mean, this is what America is about. We kill off the native peoples. We murder their cultures. We then proceed to rip off all of their ways of surviving. An example everyone knows is the destruction of the buffalo, which was a strategy not just to make the buffalo not run across the railroad tracks, as we were taught in school, but in fact to destroy the source of protein for Plains Native Americans. The patterns are really clear, and the tendency to deny the patterns or to say that it was just selfish. It isn't just selfish, it's genocidal, and that's really a lot of what's going on. Secondly, we really have a system which goes beyond the genocide of one native people or another. We have, in fact, an EPA head who is going to remove the demands and the pressures on the automakers to reduce their emissions. All that's going to be gone. We will all get cars bigger than we need for the rest of our time, and they will be powered by gasoline, not electricity. It is a very serious reversal both of technology and of health.
But they're all going to have a little bracket on the back where you can put an American flag in there.
You put an American flag in?
Yeah, yeah.
We require that
kind of...
the
back of your big car, yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes you feel a lot better.
So a caller asked earlier, she wondered why it was that the energy industry seems to be coddled and protected while so many other things go neglected. I believe she mentioned the people in Flint, Michigan in that context.
Yeah.
And the answer is pretty simple. And that is that industrial capitalism relies on, utterly, on cheap energy. And fossil fuels are the cheapest, most readily available source of energy that we know. One might argue that solar is cheaper and more readily available. And I would say that's true. But we haven't developed that to the scale yet where it can sufficiently displace the use of fossil fuels. So that's why the energy industry is coddled.
Well,
because the whole show depends on them.
Right. Well, you know, this goes back to my kind of radical analysis. We are committed to a profit-oriented system where profitability is the more legitimate reason for anything.
Yes, yes. But I would take it a little bit further and say ultimately that profitability is dependent at the end of the day on the extraction of raw materials.
Right. And well, the extractive industry dominates.
Well, the extractive industry is the baseline for all industries that flow from it, you might say. And in the end, we have an economic system, industrial capitalism, that is predicated on endless growth, yet it is contained in a finite biosphere. And we have been seeing now for many decades what happens when a system like that bumps up against the limits of a finite biosphere. The planet is growing warmer. Bioregions are being decimated. Pollutants are being strewn into the atmosphere and into the water and into the land. And we are gradually rendering this planet inhospitable to the conditions that led to our own evolution. So we are quite literally enacting our own long-term death sentence by sticking with the system of global industrial capitalism. Period.
Well, yeah, no, that's true. I mean, we don't have time today to go into what is happening with endocrine disruptors.
No, we don't have time.
And the food supply. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that are being done by this administration at the behest of a reactionary and, I have to say, ignorant Republican Congress.
And with the complicity to a smaller or greater degree of all of us. We are all part of this society. We are all complicit to some degree or another.
I'm not going to accept blame for this.
You drive a gas-burning car, do you not?
I mostly walk, actually.
Yes.
And I'm not going into the situation that requires me to have a car. But the fact of the matter is that I don't have the money to buy a Tesla.
No, nor do I.
Okay.
My point is that none of us have completely clean hands here. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but there's danger in saying we all share the guilt. And we do. But the fact of the matter is we are powerless in the face of great power.
There's some who are a whole lot more guilty.
I mean, really. others. It's not my fault. And I'm here to say I'm doing what I can.
Let's go back to the phones.
Okay.
Brian, good morning. Brian, what's on your mind? Okay.
Brian's
is
not.
Are you actually there you are. Sean?
You're on.
Sean.
Oh, Sean. Okay.
Yeah.
Good morning,
all right,
Sean.
Good morning. I was just calling kind of in response to Michael that called in earlier. And one thing that I wanted to point out is that a lot of the timber industry, the jobs were lost, not due to environmental regulations, but due to mechanization and you know, one machine being able to do the job of many, many men.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I think that's a very important thing. I think the environmental groups have been blamed for a lot of job losses that weren't necessarily due to regulations. Also, there was a lot of private industry, you know, very large timber companies that were buying out the smaller companies and basically shutting them down. And small mills getting shut down, pushed out by really large corporations. So I just thought that was a really important point to make, that, you know, it wasn't just environmental regulation that really took the jobs down in Oregon State.
It was automation. Yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of automation.
And not just in timber, but in manufacturing industries across the board.
Yeah, including coal, I'm sure, as well. You know, the mountaintop removal, they're still doing huge amounts of coal being taken out, but it's, again, big machines that can do the jobs of hundreds of people.
Right.
So I just wanted to make that point.
No, it's a good point. Yeah. And I'm picking up on this article in the New York Times today, which you can get online. Really, what is happening when you decimate the EPA, when you bring in as the EPA administrator a guy who has a history of anti-environmental activity, when the Pruitt of the world takes over an agency, and that's what Trump and his administration, as well as Congress, has been doing, is essentially, emasculating, destroying the ability of agencies to enforce. And the consequences of that will not be for this generation, but for many generations to come. And it's really serious, and it's really happening, and most people will not feel it until it's way too late.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I thank you for your call, man. Yeah.
Well, okay. And just going back also to, capitalism being a destruction of the environment, and Michael was saying, well, but it's, it's fed all these people and brought people out of poverty, and that may be true to an extent, but it also is unsustainable. So it is a destruction of the economy as well. Mm-hmm. Eventually it destroys itself.
Yeah, you're right.
No, I think both of us agree with you. We're going to let you go. Give some other folks an opportunity. We're running out of time.
Yes, we are. Who's next? Brian, good morning.
Oh, hi. There I go.
Hey, sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. I just came in. I farm. I have a small farm. And I just joined the conversation kind of late. But at one point, I heard a couple things I wanted to comment on. One was the last one. Joe said something about it. Well, it's out of our hands. And we're talking about all these things are out of our hands. But there's so much that people can do to, for example, support local agriculture. You can, in your daily life, everybody eats every day. And so the problem is, it's our own damn selves because convenience is king. You're not going to leave the show, and you're going to be when you leave the show today, you're going to be in a hurry. You got lots of things to do. You're probably going to stop by McDonald's or something and get a grab.
I'll never stop by McDonald's. They'll take that hamburger out of my dying hand.
There you go. And that's we're killing ourselves from the inside out. And so, it's convenience is king. I mean, we can gripe and complain, but like when our cars get old, you're not going to keep fixing it to repair that old car and preserve that invested energy. You're going to listen to the people say, it doesn't make any sense to keep that old car, get a new one. I mean, we do all this stuff every day. I mean, there are things that we can do, and if we voted with our money, for sure, things would gradually change. But even here in progressive Portland, people are just doing the same old, so, I know it's a tired thing that I'm saying, but it needs to be, people need to
be reminded. I think it's worth considering.
We do spend money, and when we spend money, we vote with it. So what you could do is give up a little bit of convenience and eat what you know you should eat from someone who grew it close by, for example. I lost my train of thought on the first point, but that was my main point.
Okay, man.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
No, and I think here's a problem fundamentally in this conversation. We take on the responsibility for what is being done that is destroying the environment. We as citizens. But in fact, this is not just, and it certainly is much less our behavior than it is the enormous power of monopoly capitalism. This
Agreed.
Is real. This
Agreed.
Is the change that is underway, has been underway for a long, long time, and we're moving toward the end of that cycle. We really are in late-stage capitalism. And the fact that people voted, many people, not that many, by the way, actually, for Donald Trump, who is a fascist clown, has always been a fascist clown, and always will be a fascist clown, is an indication of our alienation, not of our wisdom or our choices in a rational world. And I think it's really important to understand all that. Meanwhile, we really can see, through the use of science and reasonable economics, that there are alternatives, but they will never be embraced by the existing system. That's what I think.
All right, Mark writes in to say, Trump must make concessions to progressive citizens so the constitutional state does not become a security state and democracy does not mutate into a plutocracy. Too late, Mark. Majority rule must be balanced by minority protection. Compromise and discussion aren't decorations, but acid tests for democracy. According to a Polish proverb, you can make fish soup out of an aquarium, but you can't make an aquarium out of fish soup. I like that.
That's a good, I don't know if it's really a Polish saying, but it's great.
Let's get one more call in. Who's next? Steve, good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Not much time.
Not
I'll
much
just
time.
Bring up something that's hardly ever brought up, and that's aesthetics. Mm-hmm. You know, if you drive down Highway 26 to the coast, some people could look at those huge clear cuts, and it wouldn't even bother them.
Oh, they're ugly.
Practical people and aesthetic people. Beauty. Some people do not understand beauty.
Well,
and
that's
I've never known a practical person through their lifetime to become one, an aesthete, someone who appreciates beauty.
Well, there's another aspect to this. There's the Van Dusen corridor on many of these highways, which is a several hundred yard area of uncut timber
right.
that gives the impression
right.
that the land behind that timber is all woods.
Right.
Which is not true.
Right. I used to work in forestry. You can look at our aerial photos. I mean, it's, you know. Anyway. Thanks.
Hey, thank you very much. I like the suggestion that maybe an enhanced appreciation of beauty can alter the practices of industrial capitalism.
Yeah, and I think the Tooth Fairy is real.
And listen, thank you, everybody, for taking part in today's conversation. We got a lot of work in front of us, don't we?
Oh, my. It's a very challenging world, and it could be fun if we like to work.
But there's joy in the struggle.
And
thanks,
remember,
everybody.
Listen, it's really important to understand the profound change in American politics that has happened with Trump. It's not, you know, a change from Democrats to Republicans in the traditional sense. It's way beyond that, and I've run out of time. And Abe and I are wishing you all to stay around for the other programming, which is excellent here on KBOO.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly